This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 47 of the ceasefire. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. In Gaza, the holy month of Ramadan has begun, but Palestinians are bracing for yet more scarcity of food and supplies after Israel ordered the crossings to be closed on March 2nd, in violation of the ceasefire terms and international law. Israel's order to close the crossings was seen by Palestinian civil society as an act of sabotage against the ceasefire agreement, as it is supposed to move on to stage two of the three stages that began in January. Israeli Prime Minister and war crimes suspect Benjamin Netanyahu threatened Hamas with even more consequences if it does not agree to extend phase one of their ceasefire agreement and release the remaining Israeli captives held in Gaza, which was not laid out in the stage one process. The Hamas political party responded that the Israeli government's move to close the crossings and cut off international aid was, quote, cheap extortion, a war crime, and a blatant attack on the ceasefire. The Palestinian Foreign Affairs Ministry stated that it rejected Israel's use of, quote, politicizing aid and using it as a means of blackmail, deepening the suffering of more than 2 million Palestinians, adding to their current state of suffering due to the genocidal war and displacement. Euromed Human Rights Monitor noted that senior Israeli officials have made public, openly genocidal statements in the last few days, including Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich saying Israel should open, quote, the gates of hell. Smotrich declared that halting the entry of humanitarian aid into Gaza is an important step in the right direction, further stating that Israel must open those gates as quickly and lethally as possible on the cruel enemy until absolute victory. Israeli Foreign Minister Gideon Sa'ar dismissed warnings from the United Nations and international organizations regarding the risk of renewed famine in the Gaza Strip amid the tightened blockade and halting of humanitarian aid. Sa'ar said he considered these warnings to be, quote, just a lie, and affirmed that the Israeli government has no commitment to delivering humanitarian aid. Israeli Knesset member Almog Cohen urged Israeli forces to kill Palestinians in Gaza, quote, with no mercy during the holy month of Ramadan, saying it is, quote, the best time to kill them because they are weak and tired. Reporting from a market in Khan Yunis, Al Jazeera's Tariq Abu Azoum said on Wednesday that, quote, prices have skyrocketed due to the potential scarcity of products and in light of the large consumption of people who have started to store food in preparation for the renewed starvation of the territory as long as the Israeli decision will remain in place. The United Nations World Food Programme stated on Wednesday that it only has enough food stores to keep public kitchens and bakeries open for fewer than 2 weeks, as long as the crossings remain sealed. The Gaza Government Media Office stated on Tuesday that the continuation of the ban on food, medicine, and basic supplies, quote, means the return of the specter of famine again. The health situation will also continue to worsen, the office added, quote, by preventing the entry of medicines and medical supplies, which means a death sentence for thousands of chronic patients and the injured due to the lack of health care, and a death sentence for the health system that has already collapsed due to the deliberate sabotage and destruction of the occupation army for 15 months. In addition to the banning of aid and medicine, Israel has continued to refuse to allow in heavy machinery, tents, and housing caravans as it agreed to under the ceasefire terms. Speaking to the Turkish Anadolu news agency, Salama Maruf of the government media office said that Gaza requires 200,000 tents, but only about half of that number had been delivered before the closures. Only 15 mobile homes have entered Gaza, he added, while 60,000 are needed to accommodate displaced families. Officials in the Palestinian health sector, as well as international aid organizations in Gaza, warn that if the closures remain in effect and if the ceasefire does not hold, there will be devastating consequences for Palestinians struggling to survive. The International Rescue Committee says it has gathered 6.7 tons of much-needed pharmaceutical and medical supplies for hospitals in Gaza, which was due to arrive this week but is now blocked by Israel. The aid organization Islamic Relief warned that, quote, a return to the relentless horror and atrocities that we saw for more than 15 months would be a global failure of staggering proportions. The UK group Medical Aid for Palestinians stated that, quote, a year ago, the International Court of Justice ordered measures to prevent genocide in Gaza, but by again blocking aid, Israel continues to violate them. Its return to total siege should be resolutely condemned by the international community, including the UK government, which must now take immediate action to ensure aid access is fully restored and international law is enforced. Mohammed Al-Khatib, the group's deputy director of programs in Gaza, said, quote, it is a continuation of the mockery of humanity and double standards toward the civilian population of the Gaza Strip, and the world is still standing by, watching. Clean water remains in critical shortages across Gaza. This week, the municipality of Deir al-Balah in central Gaza announced that its two desalinization plants have stopped working due to the lack of fuel to run the electricity generators. Journalist and researcher Maha Husseini of the Euromed Human Rights Monitor reported from the dialysis clinic at Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City on Wednesday, where she said, quote, all machines have suddenly stopped working due to a lack of water. The machines have been shut down for the day and patients were sent home until the water tanks are refilled. Israel has destroyed around 90% of Gaza's water wells and 80% of its water infrastructure, making access to water a daily struggle for both individuals and hospitals, she added. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight excerpts of In Gaza's Ruins, A Different Kind of War by Abdullah Yunus, writing from Gaza. Abdullah profiles several families living in unsafe conditions as Netanyahu shut the crossings once more. He writes that, quote, after 15 months of forced displacement, Mutasim Zahed and his family were able to return to their home in Jabalia in northern Gaza. The family of six had endured more than a year of relentless Israeli attacks, but the ceasefire that allowed for the family's return to their badly damaged home did not mean that their struggle for survival was over. The widespread destruction wrought by Israel and the lack of essential infrastructure and insufficient humanitarian assistance has left Palestinians in Gaza like Mutasim and his family feeling they are now enduring a different kind of war. When Mutasim, 53 years old, returned to his home, he found that the walls had collapsed and the ceiling was cracked. It was no longer suitable for him and his family. After they could not find a tent or a shelter center to receive them, Mutasim said that their only option was to try to repair part of their dilapidated home using wood and nylon sheeting. We sleep in fear that the ceiling will collapse on our heads at any moment, but it is still better than staying in the street, Mutasim told the Electronic Intifada. At night, the family remains alert for any noises that might indicate structural failure. We no longer know which is more dangerous, staying under this cracked ceiling or going out into the open without shelter, Mutasim said. With basic infrastructure in the area destroyed, Mutasim is forced to walk for hours in search of any working water well. He often returns with a small bucket that is not enough to meet the family's needs for one day. We live on drops of water, and we wash our faces with an amount that is not enough for a child, he said. Ala Zahed, Mutasim's wife, pointed to Israel's deliberate manufacturing of the catastrophic conditions their family is being subjected to. We feel like we are living inside a time bomb that could collapse on us at any moment, she said, referring to the family's severely damaged home. Why does Israel not allow the entry of caravans and tents into the Strip as stipulated in the ceasefire agreement? That is an excerpt from Abdullah Yunus's feature in Gaza's Ruins, A Different Kind of War on electronicintifada.net. Turning to the occupied West Bank, our contributor Zeina El-Tahan writes about Israel's military assault on the Al-Farah refugee camp in the northern occupied West Bank, part of a wider and ongoing string of attacks that began in mid-January in the Jenin, Nablus, and Tulkarm areas. Zeina writes that at least 60 Palestinians have been killed and dozens more wounded across the northern West Bank since the start of the operation. Some 40,000 Palestinians have been forced from their homes, with the Jenin, Tulkarm, and Nur Shams refugee camps almost completely emptied. She adds that Israeli soldiers occupied Palestinian homes in Al-Farah camp and used them as military outposts during their 11-day assault last month, leaving behind feces, urine, and used condoms. Fida Abu Zeina's home was one of them. Abu Zeina, 46, his wife and three children were forced out at gunpoint on February 2nd, the first day of the assault. Given their home's location at the entrance to the camp, theirs was the first case of expulsion. Using his home as a military outpost, soldiers lived, slept, and ate in Abu Zeina's home for 11 days, during which they vandalized it beyond recognition, leaving a stench of urine and feces and used condoms on the floor and in the closets. Quote, "I lost my mind when I saw the inside of my home for the first time after they withdrew. It's a garbage dump. It's uninhabitable. There's no home anymore," Abu Zeina, a former welder, told the Electronic Intifada from his bare living room, which he had to empty of all the furniture that had been ruined by soldiers. "They told us we had 5 minutes to grab our belongings and leave and to come back a month later," Abu Zeina said. "The soldiers tried to force us to leave the camp, but I refused. I told them they can bomb my house and me along with it. In the end, they let me go to my father's house in another part of the camp." Israel's current assault is the longest in the occupied West Bank in more than two decades, and it is the largest operation of forcible displacement there since 1967. Israeli military vehicles rampaging through the streets of Jenin on March 4th. The Palestinian rights group Al-Haq said that the entire city of Jenin was completely sealed off, with all entrances and exits blocked on day 43 of the large-scale Israeli military assault. Israeli occupying forces launched their third phase of their attack on Jenin, sending in a large number of military vehicles, including 10 Eitan armored carriers, Apache helicopter gunships, and reconnaissance drones, Al-Haq said. Read Zeina El-Tahan's report, Israeli soldiers vandalize and desecrate West Bank homes, on electronicintifada.net for much more. Meanwhile, Defense for Children International Palestine reports that 2 weeks after Israeli forces arrested and detained a 14-year-old child from his home in Beit Fajar, south of Bethlehem, during a pre-dawn raid, a four-month administrative detention order was issued against him this week. Muin Ghassan Fahad Salahat, the group says, is the youngest Palestinian child placed under an administrative detention order since DCIP began monitoring child administrative detainees in 2008. Israeli soldiers forcibly entered Muin's home at 3:40 in the morning on February 19th, DCIP states. Muin's father was immediately detained, blindfolded, and restrained with his hands behind his back. When Muin awoke and went to find his father, Israeli soldiers seized him and began searching the house. The family was not given an arrest warrant and were told not to move, while soldiers damaged their belongings and confiscated phones and a computer. The soldiers attempted to blindfold Muin and tie his hands behind his back as they took him away. Afterward, a soldier warned Muin's father not to move for at least 10 minutes. Administrative detention violates fundamental due process rights, yet Israeli forces are now expanding this draconian policy to detain Palestinian children indefinitely without charge or trial, said Ayed Abu Aktesh, Accountability Program Director at DCIP. Muin's case sets a dangerous precedent, showing that no Palestinian child, regardless of age, is safe from arbitrary imprisonment under Israel's military rule, he added. Muin, a ninth grade student and the only child in his family, has been placed under administrative detention, a practice in which Israeli authorities detain Palestinians, including children, without charge or trial based on secret evidence that neither the detainee nor their lawyer can review. Israeli forces are holding 112 Palestinian children in administrative detention as of December 31, 2024, according to information shared by the Israel Prison Service, the highest number of child detainees since DCIP began monitoring this number in 2008. Finally, as we always do, we wanted to share images of people expressing determination and resilience across Palestine. In the occupied West Bank, Mohammed Al-Maleh, who is in Israeli prison for 29 years and was recently released during prisoner exchange, was able to finally be with his family and break their fast together on the first day of Ramadan. He says, quote, "Despite all the tragedies and circumstances that we live through on a daily basis, we always have the ability to find moments of joy, and this gathering is one of those moments." An older relative says that this Ramadan is special because their hero is back.
لكن رغم كل هذه الظروف وكل هاي المآسي اللي بنعيشها بشكل يومي دائما عندنا القدرة ان احنا خلينا نقول نسرق لحظات فرح وبعتقد هذه الجمعة هي واحدة من هذه اللحظات.
And in Gaza, amongst the rubble in Rafah, dining tables were lined up as far as the eye can see, preparing for an iftar meal. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.